Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you for having me. I feel very excited to be here. I also recommend that everyone does meditation before they get up to speak in front of a group of people because I feel a whole lot calmer than I did. So I'm here to talk about, I don't know what to do with my hands. So there's gonna be a lot of awkwardness here. We can just work through this. As I said, and as everyone else said, I am Ebony Baxter. I am a graduate of Sagertown High School. I have lived in Meadville, Crawford County, on and off for most of my life. I grew up in the foster care system for a lot of my life, and then I finally had a family that I just never aged out of, or it was more so like they just couldn't get rid of me, so they kept me. So those are my parents. So a lot of the work that I had started out doing was based on children. A lot of it was based on youth with a lot of mental health needs, and that's kind of how I got wrapped up in all of this community work, was first starting to work with children who were going through the same situations in foster care or were dealing with similar situations than I was when I was younger. And it was a really powerful thing to be able to go to some of these children and their families and talk with them and try to help them through their needs in their home and have a story of, hey, I've been there. I've sat where you've sat. I've went to these same appointments. I've had the same struggles that you've had, and I've been able to overcome them. And while reminding them that it's not easy to overcome these things and that it takes a lot of work sometimes to overcome any kind of adversity and or trauma. So that's when I mainly got introduced to trauma and the effects that trauma can have on you into your adult life. A lot of the time, before taking the trainings that I needed to do the job, I knew that I had trauma, but I didn't really know that there was a name for it. I knew that things had happened to me in my childhood before the age of 18 that probably weren't the best situations. But when you're in the situations, you don't really realize that it's a trauma. You realize that it's something that might not be the best situation or something that might not be going on in someone else's home, but you don't necessarily realize the effect that those things can have on you. So when I started to get more involved through human services and doing trainings and things, I was introduced to the ACEs study. Are a lot of you familiar with ACEs? Okay, all right, don't be shy. You raise your hands, dude. That's okay, I'll explain. So ACEs is an acronym. It stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And our adverse childhood experiences affect us into our adult lives. And there are a lot of studies that are going on that prove this information. So things that happen to you before the age of 18 are able to affect you after that. So I was given a quiz, and it had 10 questions on it. And there, a lot of them were simple questions. And you kind of went through and you would answer those questions. And for everything that you had experienced in your life before the age of 18, you would get a check mark for. And at the end, you would add those check marks up. And whatever your score was, though, there was a list of things that were more likely to happen to you the higher that your score was. Whether that be you were more prone to addiction, you were more prone to incarceration, you're more prone to be involved in promiscuous activity. There were a lot of different things. And after taking that test, I realized I'm a 9. There are 10 questions. You can't get higher than that. You can't get higher than a 10. And then I started to look at things around me and I'm like, wow, but I don't meet this check mark and I don't meet this check mark or this one. And you start to look at it and think, these things can be reversed. They don't have to be that way. So now, in the scope of hope, we are taking these things into consideration when it comes to not only individuals, but when we talk about community as well. Some communities have experienced traumas. Some of those traumas are poverty. Some of those traumas are racism. Some of those traumas are just not being able to make ends meet with their families or themselves. Some of these traumas are just communities that have been ripped apart. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Fifth Ward neighborhood, but the Fifth Ward neighborhood is one of the most historically disenfranchised neighborhoods in Meadville. They have felt that a lot of things can't get done down there. They thought that a lot of things they were being ignored for. They felt that since their area is a flood zone, that they're always hearing, no, you're a flood zone. We can't do that down there. So through a project that Women's Services, Crawford County Human Services, there are some other people, and I don't want to forget anyone, so I'm just going to stop listing off agencies. I think Peace for Crawford is also a part of it. Some people went to a training down in Pittsburgh, and we learned what was going on down there in their neighborhoods through a man named Father Paul Abernathy. He is running a neighborhood resiliency project in the Hill District of Pittsburgh. So myself and six other colleagues went to Pittsburgh for a week, and we stayed at Duquesne University, and we learned what they were doing in their neighborhoods. And we thought, how can we take this framework, and how can we make it work for us? Pittsburgh looks very different. Their traumas are very different. One of their big traumas is gun violence. That is something that we don't have a lot of here. It's something that can happen, because it can happen anywhere. But it's not something that we have here, specifically, a lot of, to where we would start an initiative to try to prevent it. But what kinds of traumas do we have here? We have a lot of drug use. We have a lot of addiction. We have a lot of overdose. We have a lot of poverty. Those are the kinds of things that we thought that we could start to work around. So through HOPE, it's an acronym. And our acronym stands for H is health and well-being. O is opportunity making. We want to make sure that people are able to make opportunities for themselves. And not only are they able to make these opportunities for themselves, but they're able to sustain these opportunities. And you have to be healthy to sustain opportunity. We can teach you to do something, or we can give you the tools to do it. But if you're not healthy, how would you ever maintain? How would you ever continue to use those tools that you've been given? You can't. P stands for placemaking, so that people can feel like they have a place where they are welcome, so people can feel like they have a place where they have a home, where they're understood, where they fit, because not everyone feels as though they fit somewhere. So we are trying to help these communities make this space. If you don't find a space where you feel like you fit, make it. E in HOPE stands for engaging. We want to engage the people in the communities. We want to make sure that they feel as though they're important, that their ideas matter, that their feelings matter, that when they have a problem in their community, they have somewhere that they can go and someone that will listen to them. So I started working for the HOPE Project in February, which was almost a year after we had already attended the initial training. And through this process, we went and we canvassed neighborhoods, old school canvassing. I've never had so many doors slammed in my face in my entire life than when I started canvassing neighborhoods with the simple question of, what do you like about your neighborhood? That's it. That's all I was asking. I didn't ask for any donations. I didn't want any kind of, you know, cult following. I just wanted to know, because it's important to know what people want. Going into a neighborhood and saying, you need to fix this, and this isn't okay, and, oh, we could help you do that, people start to feel like they're a pity project, because you're not asking them what they want. You're coming into a place that you don't live, that you have no connection to, and you're telling people what you feel like needs done in their neighborhoods. This project is different because we want to know what you don't like about your neighborhood. We want to know what you would want to fix about your neighborhood. And that could be nothing, and that's great. And at that point, we move on because we want to work with people who want us to work with them. So we were chosen by a neighborhood, and the neighborhood that we were chosen by was the Fifth Ward community. We started by having two community meetings, though. One of them was on South Main Street, and the other one was in Fifth Ward. And through that, we took whichever community had the most interest in what we were trying to do. And we wanted them to have interest because we need the community to work with us. We want the community to work with us. So throughout all the canvassing, we got to know people, which is important because if you're working with people, you need to know who you're working with. We got to know stories. We got to have one-on-ones with people, which in the Hope Team world, a one-on-one is sitting down and having an uninterrupted conversation with someone for at least 3 to 7 minutes. And during that conversation, you're not doing anything besides actively listening to what they have to say, actively trying to find out what makes that person tick. What does that person think they need in their community? What does that person know about that we could help connect other people with? Does this person know how to do electricity? And maybe there's a young man on the other side of him who doesn't have a skill. And maybe there's a woman who lives alone and she needs some electrical work. We want to be able to connect A to B to C so that the community is able to help each other, so that someone has a skill and they're teaching someone else a skill and then they're able to maintain. So that is a little bit of the overall idea of the Hope Project and what we are trying to do. So some things that we have done since we've been in the Fifth Ward community is make connections. That is huge, 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 huge stuff, and I can't say huge enough, but because it's so big, trying to make connections with people who've historically had people come into their neighborhoods and say, oh, we're gonna help you do this, or we think you should do this, and then they're gone. They don't stay. They don't necessarily invest the time that they need to earn the trust of people who don't trust anyone because they don't feel as though they have anyone to trust. So getting people to connect with you, getting people to constantly talk to you, getting people to open their doors for you has been a huge thing. There are days when I go into the neighborhood and I've knocked on the same door at least 6 times and they've slammed the door in my face 5 out of 6 times, but there's that one time that they might take a calendar from me, or they might take an advertisement about a mental health cafe that we're having. They might want to show up to the French Creek Conservancy talk, but you never know. Some days it's there and some days it's not. So the steps that we're taking right now are mainly just trying to make those connections in the community and trying to figure out, what do you see as community? Like some of these young people set up here, I believe their definition more than I think I believe my own, because because the way that they see it is so simple. It's so, this is that. It's so concrete. And the way that others see it, they don't have a sense in certain neighborhoods. Some neighborhoods don't have an identity. And some people are dealing with the traumas that are below the surface, not just the ones that you can see, but the ones that are the root causes. And some of the root causes lead to the regular causes. If you're not healthy, you cannot have a home. If you are not able to sustain a job, you cannot pay your bills. These are the things that we're not connecting enough. So through the Hope Project, we're trying to make these connections. And we're really excited about it. So while canvassing in the Fifth Ward neighborhood, we came upon a woman named Maria Husband. And Maria led us right into her home. Maria was so excited. She wanted to answer all of our questions. She had so many ideas of things that could happen in Fifth Ward that have never happened before. And she was excited. She was one of the first people that we saw with excitement for us to show up. Excitement about what can we do to make this place better. Not that her community is not already great, but we all have things that we could be doing to make our communities better. So she was able to throw out ideas and connect with us and say, hey, I think that this would be a great idea. Why aren't we running this in Fifth Ward? Why don't we have a community center? To the point where I was like, you have to slow down because we're not there yet. This is step one. We're just rounding up people, but keep that excitement. And she did. And now Maria is, she runs the after-school lunch program with myself and another volunteer, Lindsay Melring. She's amazing. I can't brag about her enough. She is the person who opened her door and welcomed us and wanted to hear what we had to say and wanted to help her community. We do surveys. There's a lot of data collection in here because when we are done, we want to work ourselves out of a job. We want to work ourselves out of a community, and we want to be accepted by another community. We want another community to say, hey, we see what you did down there in Fifth Ward. We would love to have you come over here and try something like that with us. And people are able to see the difference in the neighborhood, the difference in the activities that are happening in the neighborhood. So as of right now, We have done, our first big event was the Easter egg hunt that was held down in Fifth Ward. I know some of you made donations to that, and I appreciate that. Thank you. We also did the Memorial Day water party, where the fire department actually came down and supported and hosed off all the kids and myself as well, and I was really excited about that. More excited than probably some of the children. We've also done a community bonfire. We had someone in the community volunteer their space, and someone else brought hot dogs, and we had a fire after the Easter egg hunt. It was kind of chilly out. It wasn't the greatest day, but we made a great situation out of something that was kind of damp, literally. So that was really great. We do mental health cafes down in Fifth Ward. If you're not familiar with a mental health cafe, it's a conversation in a safe space. When we have mental health cafes, we pick a subject, and everyone comes, and we discuss those things, whether that be we've done body image, we've done addiction, we've done, what else have we done? Feelings of loss and dealing with grief, and just having a place where people feel like they can come and have a conversation about what's on their mind or what's heavy on their heart and not feel judged. We're not therapists, luckily, but connecting with people who are going through the same thing that you have been through or may have already been through is a very powerful thing. So when you see someone or you meet someone, you know, we had a gentleman come who had just lost his wife a year and a half ago, and he was grieving. He was still grieving very heavily. And then we had a man who had lost his mother, and she had passed away in his arms about 3.5 years ago. And they were able to connect, and they were able to have a conversation about that loss and about how deeply that impacted them and about the things that they do to get through the motions, to get through the days, just to make sure that they're able to get out of bed. And to some people, that might have been just a simple connection. But to those two people, they were able to connect in a way that they hadn't been able to connect with someone before on that level. And it was someone that was right down the street from them, someone that they could have, you know, found that kind of connection with beforehand, but they didn't know. They didn't know each other. So because of these events, they were able to get to know each other better, and they were able to make these connections. And these connections are what builds community. And we need more sense of community, not just in the Fifth Ward area, but we have a lot of struggling neighborhoods around here, and I know that we don't have to list them. We all know a part of town or have seen, you know, where the houses are condemned, the lawns aren't kept up. You might have older people there that aren't able to keep up with their lawns and things, and who's helping them? Maybe they don't have anyone to come help them. So in Fifth Ward, we make those connections so that people are able to do that. They're able to get the help that they need. So we're trying really hard to build a sense of community down there, and we've done some really great things, and I hope that we continue to do some really great things. But coming up on a year into the project for myself, we've had a lot of different events, and I'll read you just a few stats, and I know that stats are really boring. I find them very boring, but my friend Marsha thinks that they're the best thing ever, so I will share them with you. So some of the demographics for Fifth Ward is 53% of the families in Fifth Ward receive SNAP benefits. 67% of the families in Fifth Ward have received SNAP benefits but have been had them disabled because of one thing or another. There are 20% of the population in our micro community, which I will explain that. Our micro community, the idea from the Pittsburgh idea is that you can't take too big of a place and try to change it at once, because it could be almost virtually impossible to get the identity that this place might have their own identity, but this block has an identity of their own. So we were taught to work with the identities of the neighborhoods in micro communities by making them smaller, 2 to 3 blocks at a time, and canvassing all those homes on those 2 to 3 blocks and finding out the information about them. In this situation, we've had to step outside of the box a little bit because our micro community did not want us there. So we weren't finding a lot of the participation that we wanted. We weren't finding a lot of the community leaders that we thought we would find. In 77 households, we had 2 people that wanted to come out and help us. 2. So we expanded our block. We expanded farther onto Race Street and down Columbia a little farther. And through that, we have found a little bit more participation, but it's still not steady. Our biggest thing that we've had to date is our chili cook-off. We did our first annual Fifth Ward chili cook-off. We almost got the fire marshal called on us because we are housed in Bethany United Methodist Church on Wadsworth Ave, which I'm not sure if you are familiar with Bethany, but it is a very small church. But we had a very small group of people at first, and we were begging people to show up, so we didn't need a lot of space. So the chili cook-off showed up, and we had 45 people show up. And I said, oh my goodness, where are we going to put all these people? And luckily, they weren't there all at the same time. But it was one of the biggest indoor events that we had had. And the church was very happy. And they're like, you can't have that many people in here ever again. And we're like, okay. So you find problems like that. Where are we going to house people? Where are we going to have another activity? There aren't a lot of places down in Fifth Ward that you can house a lot of people. So you run into struggles when you're trying to do this work, but then you also run into milestones where you know, we had 45 people and only 8 of them were actually from the Fifth Ward community, but it's still the idea that people were showing up and people were coming down to this community and they were spending time there. I'm probably over my time. I don't know how many minutes I've been talking and I like to ramble. So that's my thing. I'm good? Oh, okay. All right. So a few more of the demographics and statistics down there are 2% of people under 18 have no insurance in the Fifth Ward neighborhood. 16% of families in the Fifth Ward have children. 28% of the homes down in Fifth Ward are single-parent households. The strengths of the Fifth Ward community. They are a clearly defined neighborhood. They know who they are and they have an identity. They just don't share that identity with each other. They have the access to French Creek. That is a huge thing that connects the people of Fifth Ward. And we are also working with the French Creek Conservancy right now. And we are going to be doing French Creek stories. So if you know anyone who has any stories, please send them to me because that is a part of the identity of Fifth Ward. French Creek is a huge landmark down there. If you grew up in Fifth Ward, you played in the creek or you weren't allowed to be in the creek. That's a thing. There was no happy medium. It is an important part of that. And growing up down there for a short time when I had first moved to Meadville, French Creek was a big deal. Crayfish hunting, I did that. I did a lot of it. Was I allowed to be in the creek? No, but I was there. Also, a lot of vacant properties we see down there. There are a lot of properties down there that need a lot of work, and the ownership is kind of blurred in some of them, trying to figure out how to get them fixed up, trying to find the people that own them. That is a huge thing, and those are some of the complaints of the residents that live down there. We want our neighborhood to look nice, but if we can't find the people that own the property, how do we make it look nice? So we've done cleanup days where we've went around to the vacant properties or the properties that we don't know who owns them, and we've cleaned the yards up and made them look nice just for the sake of the community. Some of the challenges down there are flooding, obviously. The number one thing that Fifth Warders talk about when it comes to negatives is the flooding. Fifth Ward has flooded for years, probably long before I was here, and probably long before a lot of us were on this earth. I'm sure Fifth Ward was flooding. It's been doing that for years. So trying to get things fixed in Fifth Ward can be difficult. And at some point, we've had a resident that we know that her home had kept flooding, and she was a renter, and the landlord, she had a lot of mold in her home because the house is flooded. And the landlord wouldn't fix the mold because it was said that he didn't have to because it's in a flood zone. And all houses down there have mold because they're in a flood zone. So there are loopholes that people are able to go through down in this neighborhood so they don't have to do anything because of where the neighborhood is. And these, I'm speaking for the residents. Okay, I just want to be clear about that. These are things that I've heard from the residents. I always want to be clear when I'm speaking about the Hope Project and the things that I say are problems down there, and I always want to make sure that I'm clear that these are the things that are coming from the residents and directly from the people who reside in this neighborhood. The building development is not allowed because it is a flood zone. They're separated from Meadville. At some point when we had come down there, they had talked about A concern was the Spring Street Bridge being shut down for construction. That's supposed to happen at some point in time. There are a lot of families down there that don't have cars. They don't have transportation. A lot of them walk back and forth over the bridge. And a lot of them had the concern of, how the heck am I supposed to get to the Dollar General if I can't walk over the bridge and get there? Some of them aren't able to afford bus passes. They just don't have the money to ride the bus. It's just not possible for them for one reason or another. So that was something that they were very concerned about. The homeless site, I'm sure we've all been aware that there's a homeless site that sits right under the bridge. It moves from place to place, but a lot of the time it's in Fifth Ward, sitting right under the Spring Street Bridge, which is right next door to our community leader Maria's home. So people are outside living in tents. She sometimes, but what she does is she calls CHAPS. As soon as she finds out that there are people down there, they abandon the camp, they come back, it just depends. But they're also finding, when they leave, they're leaving everything behind. Whether that be drug paraphernalia, whether that be waste, whatever it is, they're leaving it behind. And that's a part of the neighborhood, and that's a part of her home that she can see. She can see that from her home. So those are the kinds of things that the residents are dealing with down in Fifth Ward. And we are trying to develop networks between these people. We're trying to help them empower each other. We're trying to help them empower themselves. We want them to want better for their neighborhoods, and we want to stand by and help them while they try. So thank you all for listening to me ramble this morning. I think I forgot what my point actually was, but I appreciate you all listening to me. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you again.